Hello, and welcome to a special mini-series of Honestly, recorded during COVID-19. Like everyone, I've found the whole experience to be somewhat of an emotional roller coaster, with the ups and downs sometimes coming on a nearly hourly basis. When pulling together the guests, I was keen to delve into some universal topics that had helped us through lockdown, but that will continue to feel relevant as we move onwards to a post-coronavirus chapter. This series has been made possible by our sponsors PayPal, who came on board at such short notice. For them, the key message is one of kindness, something that is so needed at the moment. One that can, on occasion, be made easier using the PayPal app. Whether it's preparing for a future haircut from your hairdresser friend, popping some dosh towards a takeaway for a pal who is at their wit's end, or, like we did, ordering a bunch of craft stuff from a local art shop who delivered paints and other bits to our front door on a bike. You can show your support and appreciation for someone by sending them money quickly and securely via the PayPal app. And now on to a little bit of housekeeping. We recorded these episodes in the safety of all of our homes during lockdown, so we've been heavily reliant on the mercy of the internet. Also, in the spirit of being honest and to paint a visual for you, my recording studio is actually the corner of my eldest son's bedroom. There is Lego underfoot, there are children wrestling off mic, and I'm sheltering in what can only be described as a fort made of pillows in an attempt to improve the sound quality. You can expect some technical issues as we battle with Wi-Fi strength throughout some of the episodes, but please do stay with us as we promise every episode has something you can take away from it. I make no secret of the fact that there are a few things I like more than food. In fact, I recently heard Jane Rayner say, "It's not that I don't like people who don't like food, but I know I'm never going to end up being great friends with them." And I completely agree. And that's why I was overjoyed to have time to speak to Anna Jones, aka The Modern Cook, a food writer and Guardian columnist and author. And we dedicated a whole episode to the subject of food, from stockpiling pasta to baking banana bread and sourdough, or in my family's case, eating a lot of pizza and endless snacks. We talked about how comforting food and cooking is and why it feels so important to us in tricky times. We also delved into the hot topic of slow cookers. Probably not an episode to listen to if you're peckish. Otherwise, I hope you enjoy it. I always like to start with a quick fire round to get us like in the mood. So right. On a scale of 1 to 10, how are you?
I would say about, I'll give myself about an 8.
Pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm quite a positive outlook person. So, I mean, I think there's some people having some really, really rubbish times right now. So I'm trying to focus on the positive and count my blessings, really.
And I think I can only speak for myself, but towards the beginning part of lockdown, my emotions were much more up and down, but I do feel broadly a bit more level now.
Yeah, I do. I had a real dip a couple of weeks ago, actually, where it just felt so Groundhog Day. You know, we were struggling a bit with, at the beginning, it was all, you know, I felt like we had a little routine and there was a novelty to it, you know, yes. To us all being together all the time. And I was enjoying that. But yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I definitely had a dip. But, you know, I think all of us have. There's times where it's just felt overwhelming. And I have to say, I've not really been engaging in the news very much. I've sort of been keeping myself like top line informed because I feel it's only responsible and actually respectful to do so to the people who have sadly lost their lives in all of this. But I'm trying not to read too much. And at the beginning, I think I was just scrolling, and it was like watching a kind of disaster movie unfold. And there was an addiction to it, which I found was really not helping me out.
And also, the reality is it isn't going to move fast. We're all looking for quick answers, and this is the opposite of that. You know, it's such a slow burn. You're right. Yeah, of course, I've watched the big bits, but trying not to get lost in it. And similarly, I found social media to begin with really, really overwhelming as well, because there's such a lot of opinions and people all playing out their coping strategies. And you have to just go, oh, right, yeah, this isn't making me feel very good. I'm just going to do something else, like cooking, which is what we'll get onto in a minute.
Yeah,
but I'm glad you're an 8 out of 10. That's good. It's nice to feel that way.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how well did you sleep last night?
Oh, you know what? I would give myself about 4 or 5.
Oh.
I'm generally not a great sleeper. I've sort of had insomnia all my life, basically, and it goes up and down. My husband is like one of those annoying people who head hits the pillow and then literally will just wake up at like 7 every day, fresh as a daisy. I've developed quite a few strategies to kind of cope and to not get into my head at night and stuff. So last night I actually listened to a bit of Louis Theroux at 2 a.m, which felt quite calming.
He's a safe space, isn't he?
He's a safe space.
How did you get into this being your job?
So I had a childhood love of cooking, and I used to cook, you know, I literally would be like inside like making lemon mousse, and I remember like frosting grapes was a thing I did for a while, where you dip grapes in egg white and then sugar. I mean, literally disgusting, but it was kind of like late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It seemed very fancy at the time. Anyway, for some reason when I was like 10 or 11, those were the things that like really floated my boat. So I was really into it for years, and I'd cook a lot of the dinners at home. And then I think I sort of went to university, still used to cook like big basic things for my friends, like big lasagnas, big curries, big chilies, and like had all my mates round. So it was always part of what I was doing, but I don't think I ever considered it as something that I could do as a job. I don't know why. I think, well, actually, I do know why, because I think the food scene has massively changed. You know, back then, your only real option as someone who wanted to cook would be to go into a restaurant. And I guess the kind of pinnacle of that was like a Michelin starred restaurant. And I could never envisage myself in those restaurants. And then I saw one day, I read this article in the paper that basically said you should determine your kind of calling, in inverted commas, by the bit of the Sunday paper you turn to first. Which I think is like, was such good advice. And it was honestly a light bulb moment. I was like, right, it's always the restaurant section. I'm going to be a cook. And it was one of those situations where it was like everything just happened so quickly. I got to work. On my work time, I probably should admit, I googled like cooking courses in London. The Jamie Oliver 15 thing came up. There was a selection weekend that weekend. I went and did it. And then by the Monday, basically, they'd offered me a place on the 15 program. So that's the, a long-winded version of how I got to start off cooking.
How old were you when you went to Jamie's?
I was 24, so I was one of the older people there. Also, I was kind of like, I didn't think that they would take me on. I kind of went to the interview as a bit of a punt, because at the time it was before any of the TV shows had gone out. So I think they saw that I was really passionate about food and gave me a place, which was really the most incredible leg up into the industry, really.
Were you just like, I cannot believe I'm getting to do this, getting to cook all day every day? Was it that kind of honeymoon feeling?
It was real kind of pinch yourself moments. Yeah, cooking every day, I was just like, this just, to me, it didn't feel like work, because I was learning something I wanted to learn so much. Obviously now cooking does feel like work, but I didn't last.
I was about to ask you that. That's the thing, isn't it? Like they always say, do something you love and it will never feel like work. But then there are certain passions of mine, actually cooking being one of them, that I wouldn't, not that I could ever have been a chef, but that I haven't explored much more, because I want to keep it sacred as something to enjoy in a kind of non-challenged way almost. How does that feel for you now that something you love so much is your job?
It actually feels really good. I think a few years ago when Dylan was really young, I went through a bit of a phase of like feeling slightly jaded with it. I think I lost inspiration a bit. I had a bit of like postnatal depression, and I just wasn't inspired, not for a long time, but just for a few months. And I just thought, God, is this, you know, something I still want to do. But I think I'm quite good at like, you know, compartmentalizing it. I definitely cook a certain way, you know, for my family. And then I, you know, make sure that the things I'm cooking for work, I, you know, obviously in lockdown I can't do it, but I have a little studio where I go and cook that is kind of, that I share with a few other people, that is separate. So, and I cook in a totally different way when I'm writing recipes and testing recipes, because obviously I have to make sure they're really exact, but actually by nature I'm quite a kind of throw it together cook.
And the nature of it is that it will change. Like when you're saying that you wobbled after having a child, I think so many of us can relate to that in whatever our career choices and also your creative endeavors, because you've lost yourself, like even it's so difficult to know. I definitely feel like I had undiagnosed postnatal depression with my first, because the loss of identity and self and your world, literally everything, is such a brutal period of time. And also you've got a voice in your head going, you should be really enjoying this. This is joyful. There's, when you're trying to navigate all that, it's so difficult to then be making creative things or thinking about the outside world, I think, anyway.
Absolutely. And I felt like that kind of sort of creative side of my brain just got totally shut down for a while. It was more kind of, I definitely think that fight or flight side of my brain took over, and I had to let it take over for a while, because, you know, that beginning bit with kids that don't sleep and, you know, still both me and my husband both work for ourselves, like trying to, you know, keep a business afloat, that side of my brain had to take over for a bit, and luckily it's settled back down again. But I had to say, I'm finding it, you know, this lockdown is tricky for inspiration. There's definitely an inspiration from, you know, the sort of way in which we're cooking. So obviously we're shopping less, we're relying on store cupboard more, you know, perhaps we're eating in a slightly simpler way, and it's much more family cooking, I think, for a lot of people who are isolating with families.
One of the most popular posts that I've posted in the last, what are we in, 8 weeks, was about baked potatoes. And it's so funny, the things that people want to talk about in this space. And it's kind of no surprise, I suppose, that food feels very comforting, and especially food like that, I mean comfort food, that is really accessible. And well, potatoes last for ages, don't they?
Yeah, I totally kind of agree on that. I feel like sort of our nostalgia cooking has really come back. I've seen that a lot. I think the very simple things like a baked potato, which, by the way, I am an unbelievable fan of. I think baked
potatoes. Well, yes, but your post, tell me what those toppings were. I mean, we're not talking tuna and cheese.
There's a load of different toppings I use. My favorite one ever is like a leek or some spring onions cooked down, mixed with some grated cheddar, some mustard, and if you have it, a bit of either Greek yogurt or creme fraiche, and then that kind of mashed into the potato. I mean, it's honestly about my dream meal. I can't think of anything that I prefer eating to that. I mean, the meat one is the one. I make some really quick, like, homemade beans sometimes as well, like with a bit of smoked paprika, again, like spring onion or something that cooks quickly, and then some cheese. I mean, but, you know, canned baked beans, all about those as well. I was about to say that.
So my dad is an exceptional cook, but he sometimes messes around with a Heinz baked bean and like zhuzhes it up with a few things. And it has caused an argument before, because it's just like, I like all the flavour and the zhuzhing, but sometimes you can just leave a Heinz baked bean just to be a Heinz baked bean.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, I've got to say. It's, you know, I've seen some maverick things done. My mother-in-law actually always used to use a can of beans to kind of like pad out leftovers. So she'd like literally put a can of beans in soup or some stew or whatever else, or mix it with something and make it into a bake. Yeah, he's literally like, please just never put beans in anything. And she's a brilliant cook, actually, and that makes her sound like she makes really ridiculous food, and she doesn't. She's an amazing cook. But yeah, I'm with you on the baked bean. I think
keep sometimes it pure.
You've just got to keep it pure. I like a little bit of black pepper, but apart from that, you've got to appreciate the brilliance of the baked bean, I think.
Yeah, it's what it is. Do you know Ellie Pear?
Yeah.
I sat next to her at a dinner recently, and it was during a time on Instagram when things had become a bit contentious and I was feeling quite vulnerable with comments from people in DMs. And I was like, oh, I just really wish I'd focus more on food because it's a really safe space. And she's like, you say that, Clemmie, you post about a slow cooker and see how you get on. And so I took on the challenge and posted about it. I'm not into slow cookers. I really believe that if I wanted to cook something slowly, I can do it on an oven.
Yeah.
Goodness me. People are really, 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 really passionate about slow cookers. I was like, guys, I don't want your slow cooker recipe. Thank you very much. And it just went on and on and on and on like I've never known. So
I think there are certain things in cookery that people have incredibly strong opinions about. Things like baked beans, you know, ketchup, baked potatoes, slow cookers, it seems. But in general, I do think food is a safer space. I think everyone has to eat, don't they? And that's why everyone kind of relates to it. Yeah. But I have to say, I've been pretty lucky in that, you know, my Instagram is generally quite a positive place. And
have you ever expressed an opinion either for or against a slow cooker? Do you like slow cookers?
You know what? I am someone who likes to keep gadgets to a minimum in the kitchen. I just think they take up a lot of counter space and cupboard space. I'm down with a blender and those kind of things because I do think they speed up time. But for me, I just put it in a low oven. That's exactly what I think.
And I followed my post that was saying, in my mind, most things that come out of a slow cooker are just quite brown. And actually, it turns out you can do fajitas. You can do porridge in a slow cooker. Yeah. I can do a porridge on my hob. Like, I don't need, I've got a good oven that I want to use.
Yeah.
Anyway, people are passionate about it, and that's fine.
And I think some people who perhaps just don't really dig cooking love the idea that you can chop loads of stuff up, put it in a pot, and not think about it for several hours. Like, and I think there must be something really satisfying about that. I think as I don't eat meat, maybe slow cookers are not for me anyway. But as perhaps people, you and I, who really enjoy the process of cooking, maybe slow cookers are just not for us.
Cooking is ultimately a huge form of therapy. It is a real, especially cooking dinner, is the point in the day that I can actually switch off, get out of my head a bit and into my body. So I don't want to move. I don't want to lob everything just in a slow cooker. That's why. And I'm sure you feel the same about your relationship with cooking.
Yeah, I do. I am in my third book, actually, I wrote this whole thing about kind of cooking as meditation, which sounds a bit it sounds a bit trite, but it was just trying to get across being in the moment and focusing on the small things. You know, I find real solace in peeling a potato and doing like that repetitive action, or chopping something finely, or picking herbs and smelling the herb. For me, as someone who lives in central London as well, like, my connection with nature, with food and growing and what we eat is so removed most of the time. It's my little connection back to, I guess, nature, the earth, without sounding like too much of a hippie.
For me, if I ever do try and like be cooking and looking at my phone, which sometimes, you know, I do, I nearly always screw up what I'm cooking. So it's a real thing where you can't be doing both. And that's this. There's so few things these days that require you to not be on your phone and to stay focused.
Yeah, to have that complete attention. And staying with something, there are so few things we do these days where we really stay with something. But even sometimes when I'm watching TV, I'll, you know, have a look on my phone or whatever. You don't need to be an amazing cook for it to be relaxing, I don't think.
No, it's interesting. And actually, it's a good segue into this, where I always ask the people of Instagram, as I said, about their feelings on a subject. First of all, ask them if they'd cooked banana bread during lockdown. 53% had. Have you cooked banana bread during lockdown?
I have cooked a sort of version of banana bread. I do this kind of like carrot cake banana bread hybrid, which my son really, really loves and is kind of healthy. Been trying to come up with some sort of things that masquerade as sweet treats but are reasonably healthy. So we've been cooking that, but I haven't. I have been a major sourdough cliche, though, which I've been really enjoying. The sourdough has definitely been kind of rushed at the beginning and end of the day, not a kind of sort of labored over gentle process. But I have to say, going in and flipping dough around a few times a day, you know, in between emails or Lego or whatever else I'm doing, has been really rejuvenating. You know, who'd have thought 3 months ago we wouldn't be able to get our hands on a bag of flour? You know, the most basic of commodities. And I really hope that we're going to look at food a bit differently and with a bit more appreciation after this.
And it's like, what a day and age we live in where it's a shock when we can't get exactly what we want, when we want it, to our doorstep. You know, oh dear, we've got to survive with the alternative. And we've taken all of that for granted.
It is wild, the level of privilege that we have kind of come to just expect as completely normal. And it's definitely made me appreciate food in a different way. My mom and dad, and I think that generation are different because they've never really wasted food, but I think my peers are definitely cooking in a completely different way.
Yeah, completely. And I mean, as you say, we're not quite at the right demographic because we've got kids. But I do love that I've seen people doing kind of much more extravagant cooking. I have had occasional fantasies about what it would be like if we were just isolating without the kids. And obviously, I wouldn't like that. But I do. Yeah. But we've got neighbours next door who are younger than us and without kids. I do think, so you're like doing your exercise, you're doing your sourdough, doing a bit of meditation. Is that... You're not picking Lego up from the floor 20,000 times a day. No, that's fine.
Yeah, it's definitely a very different proposition. But also, I think being here with my mum and dad and my son, kids just fill the house, don't they? And yeah. I'm very thankful, whilst I would like to be meditating for an hour in a day, I think having kids around in this environment has, for all the things that it asks of you, it has also filled the house and made me grateful for the fact there isn't that much time in the day to worry about what's going on.
And all the laughter, right?
Hi, I just wanted to take a moment to mention the initiative from our sponsor, PayPal, who recognised how difficult it is for small businesses in the current climate, which is why they've launched their Pay Pallet Forward campaign, giving people the chance to shout out their local heroes in the community. I don't know about you, but a sense of community really is one of the best things to have come out of this whole lockdown experience.
I asked them how food made them feel. And these were some of the answers. Stressed, excited and anxious. Bored. I have a love-hate relationship. Most people said it made them happy. And I hate it since having kids. Well, it's so complicated, isn't it? I mean, personally, I've done a lot of work with my relationship with food. I adore food. I come from a really foodie background. And food is an act of love between a family, but how that implicates on my relationship with my body has taken me a lot of work to get to a happy place. How about you?
I think I've always been pretty lucky with my relationship with food. I'm not saying it's all been plain sailing. There've definitely been times when I haven't liked how I've looked and that's changed how I eat in a bit of a funny way. But actually, I've had the experience of having a sister who has actually struggled a bit more, not wanting to go into it too much because it's her story, but has struggled a bit more with her relationship with food. So I think that has pushed me further the other way, actually, to really be grounded in my relationship with food. So I've counted myself quite lucky, but I have definitely seen it in people very close to me and friends who literally will stress out for days or weeks because they've eaten a Mars bar. I can understand the realness of it. And I say this with an enormous amount of gratitude for the fact that my brain has never gone down that road. My brain's gone down some other funny roads. Don't get me wrong. Just not the food one.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? It's something that people are really passionate about, and often anything that comes loaded with a ton of emotion for whatever reason is naturally ends up in quite a complicated place.
I think it does. And I think, you know, the sort of wellness revolution that happened a few years ago, I don't think that was necessarily particularly helpful for anyone who has a challenged relationship with food and eating, because it weighted foods with good and bad qualities and it sort of gave foods these super capacities to heal and help us and make us lose weight. You know, that makes me feel really sad. And I think that's why I feel like my job is to really, and the job of anyone really who cooks and has a voice around food, is to sort of really, really talk about the joy of food and the pleasure of food and the connectedness of food and you know, eating together, and kind of shout from the rooftops about that, because I think the more we talk about that, the less space there will be for the other stuff.
Yeah. And also, I don't know, it's a whole other subject, but that what's healthy and what isn't, once you blow that out of the water, and I had to work hard to get to that point. I did grow up in an era when dieting was very, you know, the slimming world, and that was all that kind of language and Weight Watchers, etc., was really prevalent. And I think, unfortunately, vegetables were often seen as the bit on the side, as was the salad, and it was a space that is really bleak. And if you begin to reframe those things into being an exciting proposition, then that levels the playing field a bit.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I'm so deep in eating in a vegetarian lifestyle that I forget that vegetables and salad are something that is not an everyday part of some people's eating. I think there's definite ways of shifting how you eat without necessarily, you know, calling it a diet. I think if you fill your plate with fruit, vegetables, you know, you've kind of half won the battle there, really. Yeah. I feel so deeply for people who do struggle with eating, because it is something, having had experience of people close to me who have struggled with it for years and years and years, it is something that follows you around every day. So I think it's important to say that, and to say that there is help out there as well.
As you're saying, if it feels like it's really hard, then it's definitely worth seeking help for. I also always ask Instagram whether they've got any questions, and the first one is a complete off, you know, tangent, but what are the replacements for garlic and onion? That's coming from someone who has an intolerance to them, and first of all, my thoughts are with you. That is hard.
Yeah, no, I really feel for you on that. Really feel for you on that, because they are in absolutely everything. I presume if you're allergic to garlic and onions, that maybe it's an allium allergy, in which case things like spring onions and leeks are also off the table. But if they're not, then spring onions and leeks, I feel like, are quite a good bridge. They are not as, you know, hardcore in flavour as onions and garlic, and I quite often use them when I'm cooking either for kids or people with kind of more delicate palates, because I feel like they are a lot gentler. Replacing garlic and onions is really hard. It's basically, you know, that there are not many things that create that sort of depth of flavor that you get from really slowly cooking an onion. So my advice on that would be, if you can have leeks and spring onions, go for them. If not, I think just go down a completely different route, because you're not going to get a similar flavor. I think adding spice or adding herbs would be a good way of doing it. I think onions have got that kind of umami depth. So even if you're adding something like a tablespoon of miso, which has got that kind of rounded, deep umami flavor, it's not the same flavor as onions. If you're thinking in a soup or even in like a bolognese or a chili or something, it is going to give that rounded back note. Garlic is a tricky one as well. The garlic has got so many different flavor profiles within it, so it's really difficult to give just a one hit answer, because raw garlic grated is like kind of like, some people love it. You know, ginger cut really thinly and fried until crispy is absolutely delicious and game changing. You get that same kind of textural pop, but it's obviously not garlic. Very long winded answer there.
I think we really just have to offer our sympathies.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I actually used to do a type of yoga for years and years and years, this yoga called Isha Yoga. And that kind of tradition of yoga didn't really encourage eating any like onions and garlic. So for quite a few years, I didn't eat much onion and garlic. And I have to say it was a bit of a challenge. But I think weirdly, it reset my palate, because now if I eat something that's got like six raw garlic cloves in, I think it's like chili. The more you have it, the more you crave it. And so now I'm a bit gentler with my garlic use.
The top line is garlic is really great, isn't it?
It is a good one. It is a good one. But I mean, a life without garlic, definitely.
There are worse things, you know. For the context of where we're at in a global pandemic, if we all had to give up garlic tomorrow, we would all continue just fine, but we would be a bit sad.
Yeah, I do feel for you, because I feel like every recipe starts off with onion or garlic, so it would be hard to navigate around that.
Yeah, definitely as a parent, that's something else you come across, isn't it? Oh my word, it's got onions, and it's like, I hide onions in most things I cook you, but I know that you're very, very fearful of them. Someone else asked, actually, I should also add that when I asked people for questions for you, I had many, many people telling me how wonderful and what a genius you are, and how they couldn't live without your books, which is always nice to hear, because you can sometimes
brighten my day. Yeah.
Someone asked, how do you avoid getting stuck in a food rut?
I think we all get stuck in food ruts. I get stuck in food ruts, definitely when I'm cooking for my family. I think quite often the reason we get stuck in a food rut is also because we're in a shopping rut. I think sometimes you just do the same shop, you know, week in, week out. And then, of course, you're going to end up making the same meals. There are so many amazing quick recipes out there. And I would suggest just maybe trying, you know, a couple of recipes a week that seem interesting and achievable and that you can get the stuff for, and then adding that to your routine. And I actually think there's something really nice about having 10 or 15 reliable recipes that you can pull out the bag whenever you want. I think actually if you're going to a greengrocer, like challenging yourself to buy an ingredient that you hadn't bought before, whether it's something as simple as a butternut squash, or it might be some rhubarb, or if you're a keener cook, it might, I don't know, be a kohlrabi or something else, whatever is just a step outside your comfort zone, and then taking that home and working out what to do with it, I think is a good way of challenging yourself.
And also, going back to the baked potato, you don't have to, what's the expression, throw the baby out with the bathwater, do you? You can still be having a baked potato, but rather than your default, whatever it is, tuna and cheese or baked beans, trying to put leeks in it. And that might feel like a move, an achievable step in a different direction.
Absolutely. And I think there's ways of changing up all of those things. If you make your spaghetti and tomato sauce, and you know, my favorite thing to put on top of that at the moment is capers fried off in a little bit of olive oil until they go crispy. So crispy capers, like, massive game changer, pretty quick and easy and cheap. But you know, you'll have these kind of crunchy, salty, delicious, vinegary things popping all the way through your spaghetti, which is great. So yeah, I think it's about stretching yourself, but it's also about, just as you say, flipping the day-to-days that you know your family love or you love.
Also, I love it when you go to a friend's house and they whip something out and you're like, oh, I can just steal that recipe. If all your mates shared their regular recipes with you, you might all end up with a new menu.
Yeah, I remember doing, actually, as a gift for some friends for their wedding. This was before I had Dylan and I had a bit more time on my hands. I actually got everyone that I knew who was going to the wedding to send me a recipe. And then we put together this kind of recipe book of all, you know, everyone's, like, you know, favorite passed down or quick recipes. And it was just so nice to know the things that people I loved relied on most to cook most. So yeah, I think that's such a good idea.
Kind of fascinating, isn't it? What's everyone's Wednesday night dinner? You could know your best friends and not really know what their standard dinners are. It's really intriguing to me. The other day, Ben told our friends on a Zoom that he is enjoying lockdown, but he really can't wait till I go out in the evening so that he can. This is his favourite thing to do, is to eat chicken Kievs and watch some awful action movie. I was like, if that is really high up your list of things, I'm happy just to hang out upstairs in the evening and you can eat a chicken Kiev.
It is funny, isn't it? That kind of that alone time, that downtime. Yeah. For us, I just walked. I had to go down to a shop and I walked on my own yesterday for about 15 minutes. And I was like, I took the long route. I kind of walked very slowly. I was like, whoa, this kind of, it felt like such sanctuary to be on my own for a bit. That's been taken away, hasn't it? And I think then for some people, that's been amplified. And I know some people are isolating on their own. And actually, all they crave is, you know, sitting in a busy house with people running around. So we're all experiencing this so differently, and I think it's just trying to focus on the positive bits of whatever our experience is, isn't it?
There's a good expression going around, we are all in the same storm but we're in different boats. I thought that was a good articulation. But what I wanted to know is, if you get a night in at home, your son's in bed and your husband's out, what is your default meal when it's just you and some crap TV?
Me and some crap TV. You know what? It would be.
What would you eat?
I would order in some food probably. I don't do it very often, but sometimes I just want a night off cooking. There's a brilliant plastic-free Indian style takeaway near us in Hackney called Dabba Drop, which is insane. And that's kind of my treats on Friday nights when I know John's going to be out, and I'll like just, you know, order it. But if I am on my own and I have to cook, it's pasta. Pasta and tomato sauce, like pasta pomodoro, really, really simply. Honestly, that would be, I was asked in a column a few years ago what would be my kind of like last dinner, and I think it would be that. I just love the stuff. And to be able to sit on the sofa and like slurp it up and not worry about who's judging you with the whatever around your face. And then after that, I think some ice cream. That's what I would go for.
Chocolate ice cream.
I'm into chocolate ice cream. I've actually recently, chocolate or mint choc chip are my number.
Oh, that's number very one. 80s, 90s.
Oh yeah. I love mint choc chip. I won't hear bad words said against it. But yeah, I've recently sort of like slightly diverted to coffee as well, which is one of those things that my mom used to eat. And I used to literally be like, you are mental. Why would you choose coffee ice cream? But, you know, slowly turning into our parents.
I like coffee. I also like rum and raisin ice cream, which is absolutely hideous. I understand that.
That's my dad's fave.
I think it's the combination, it's the texture surprise of a raisin. But it's a very, very, it's not a young person. I'm not young. Who am I kidding? Well, on that bombshell, I mean, I think you can facilitate eating tomato pasta on your own at some point in the next few weeks. I think I might do it.
Yeah, I might do it. I'll see if John wants to go and have a chicken Kiev in another room. He wouldn't. He's vegetarian. But his version of a chicken Kiev, I think for him that would be some... He loves like veggie sausage and mash, which I'm not so much of a fan of. Exactly. So maybe he can go in one room and eat that, and I'll go and sit quietly and slurp some tomato spaghetti
and you'll both be happy, and that is absolutely fine. A couple of things before we finish up. Where can people find you, and have you got anything you'd like to shout about?
So people can find me on Instagram, a very annoying handle, at @we_r_food, but if you type in Anna Jones, I usually pop up. And my website, which put new recipes up there weekly, is just annajones.co.uk. I also have a newsletter that goes out every Friday, and at the moment I've been loving writing it because I've been trying to make it a place of kind of positive, interesting stuff, be it art, be it, you know, charity initiatives. And actually the day I've spent researching that has been like filling me up, because it's been, you know, frankly making me quite emotional about the amazing things that people are doing in this crazy wild time. So yeah, those things are happening.
And you're doing cook-alongs, aren't you? I'm doing
cook-alongs every Saturday night, basically. I kind of have been really missing cooking with people and having dinners with people. Obviously I'm cooking with my family, but yeah, and I think other people seem to have been missing the same thing. So I've been doing cook-alongs every Saturday night, which I've called Saturday Night Cook. So people are either cooking along with me or cooking along later, or quite a lot of people have been like, you know, calling their friends and cooking together and then sitting down and having a meal together, which I've been surprised about how much people have loved it. And I'm just finishing off a book as well that's going to come out in October, so
you're busy.
Called One. There's a few things on it. It's quite nice. I feel like I'm finishing up a few projects, which I'm hopefully depending on the situation over the summer, hopefully we might be able to have a bit of downtime somewhere.
This series of podcasts is kindly sponsored by the lovely people at PayPal, and I wondered if you'd made any weird or wonderful purchases during lockdown.
I have made a few weird purchases. They've basically mostly been based around arts and crafts for my son, because he's all of a sudden got into making things. I mean, the amount of creations we have out of cardboard boxes in this house are insane. We're going to have to start a whole different house for cardboard box creation. So yeah, I bought some PVA glue, which weirdly came in a 10-litre tub. I was expecting a full bottle. So we have enough PVA glue for the entire neighbourhood and probably in the next 10 years. Apart from that, I've been trying to kind of keep it low on the purchases, because I feel like there's other people out there who might need things bringing to their door a bit more. But I did get some very kind people sent me some surprise asparagus in the post the other day, which was in a cardboard box, and I thought it was going to be like, I don't know, a letter or a tea towel or something.
Asparagus.
I've got 4 bunches of asparagus. So I've been, we've been doing a lot of craft buying. Yeah.
And last but not least, going back to the name of this podcast, which is Honestly, if you could have an honest conversation with one person, that could be a celebrity, a troll, a friend, a younger version of yourself, someone early on in your career, who would it be and what would you say?
That's such a good question. Can it be people who aren't alive anymore?
Definitely.
I would really, really, really want to speak to my nan, who has 12 kids, because I literally cannot fathom how she managed to bring up 12 children in a like 2-bedroom terraced house with no money and no husband. I literally cannot get my head around it. And she is my constant inspiration, because, you know, when I feel like I'm like struggling to juggle stuff, I'm literally like, Anna, add on another 11 kids Ben will talk.
Totally unfathomable.
It's unbelievable. And she was just an incredibly strong, incredibly kind of giving and sweet, kind lady. And I just, you know, I don't think I quite appreciated in the time that she was alive, because she died when I was about 10, quite what a feat she had achieved. And I just like to ask her about it.
I mean, she must have, not only does she have 12 children, she must have been pregnant for quite a lot of that time. That's the other thing to comprehend.
Yeah. Well, 12 kids, so pregnant for nearly 12 years. And the mad thing is they went boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl for the entire 12. They're kind of like sort of like genetic anomaly. So, yeah, I'd like to sit around with her, peel a few potatoes and ask her for some advice. She was a soft and lovely lady, so definitely her.
Oh, that's so nice that she held on to her softness, because that kind of experience could easily make you quite tough.
I think so. She was fueled by a lot of fags and a lot of chocolate. So,
well, I mean, who can blame her? Yeah, but do what you got to do to get through it. Oh, well, thank you so much. This has been brilliant. It's been like an absolute joy for me. You get to talk about food all the time. In my personal life, I talk about food all the time, but to actually have a whole episode of the podcast about food is like, honestly, the happiest thing that could happen.
Oh, no, it's been really, really nice to speak to you. And I love the podcast. So it's lovely to be on it. And yeah, it's just nice to have a chat with someone at the moment, isn't it?
That's such a novelty. I've been Clemmie Telford, and this amazing human has been Anna Jones. And this has been Honestly Podcast. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And please do rate, review and subscribe. It does wonders for some kind of algorithm. And also because I want everyone to listen to it. And do tell your mates about it as well. Thank you so much. Thank you, Anna.
Oh, it's been such a joy. Thanks for having me.
And that's it. Thank you so much for listening to this episode from our special mini series of Honestly, pulled together in the strangest of times during the lockdown phase of COVID-19, a period of our lives that really has made us be honest with ourselves about so much. Though the topics have felt particularly pertinent during the pandemic, I hope the learnings stay relevant as we return to a new version of normal. And a special shout out to our series sponsor, PayPal. As a company, they've been at the forefront of digital payments for more than 20 years, allowing anyone with an email address to send and receive payments quickly and securely online or on their phone. Download the app today to send money to those making a difference in your life. And last but not least, I'd love to know your thoughts on the episode. Please do leave a rating or review, or if you want to get in touch, my email address is hello@clemmietelford.com. Thanks very much for listening.